So the predictions were wrong. Pundits predicted that Democrats would do badly overall this past Tuesday. Instead, it turns out that the Democrats did abysmally badly overall. When I spoke to Greg LaBelle on this program last week, we acknowledged that it would probably take some time to see what the final result would be in several important races, and we agreed that he'd be back once some definitive analysis was possible. As it turns out, it didn't take all that long, so I'm able to welcome Greg back to State of Belief Radio a lot sooner than expected. Greg, thanks for being here with us again.
I just want to say it takes a lot of courage to come back just a week after predictions. Most people who do these things sort of vanish for 6 weeks so that everyone will have forgotten what they said by the time they have to talk about them again. So,
oh, that's okay. Well, I mean, forgiveness has to be built into this whole system. Yeah. There's no question.
Yeah.
A week ago at this time, it was conventional wisdom that the GOP would do very well this past Tuesday. Do you know anyone who was predicting the party's candidates would do this well?
No. Nobody was. This was as much of a shock to Republican-leaning pundits and Republican organizers as it was to anybody. And some races in particular were real surprises.
Uh-huh. What race or two stood out for you as the biggest shockers?
The Virginia Senate race. It looked for a while like Mark Warner might actually lose that seat. And Virginia was not on anybody's radar, which may be what actually helped Gillespie sort of get where he was. And Virginia's become an interesting state. You know, they threw Eric Cantor out of office during the primaries. And now almost sent Mark Warner home mm-hmm. in the general election. So it's unclear exactly what's going on there. But that was a real, real surprise. No one thought that was going to be that close.
The one thing that everybody kept saying leading up to the election was that people are mad.
Mm.
The exit polls were showing people are really fed up with D.C. Was it that, or was there some intangible there that we didn't anticipate?
The voters in general are disgusted. They are absolutely disgusted across the board. You add to the fact that this is the sixth year of an administration. That does come into play. The president took some hits for saying that on Election Day. But in fact, it is true. There's a sense of being sort of tired of the same old story by the sixth year of a presidency. So there was that part of it too. With Virginia, it was just the opportunity that no one was paying attention that gave Gillespie the opportunity to build this this campaign up to that point. To some extent, I think Senator Warner was caught sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the combination of those three things, voter disgust, a real turning away from the president. And I think maybe – I guess if there's a fourth issue, it's turnout. What we saw was a significant drop in turnout as we did in 2010, particularly among young people and minorities. And in Virginia, that's significant.
Mm-hmm. Another big surprise or not?
I guess the closeness of the race in New Hampshire, it was registering close, but I thought, and I think a number of people thought, that there was going to be a wider space between the two candidates there. The third is probably Georgia, that it doesn't have to go to a runoff, that was so clear. And I'm going to give you a fourth, and that's Kentucky. I don't think they had shut all the machines off in Kentucky before they had declared that Mitch McConnell was the winner there. That was stunning.
As you approach looking at the election from an academic perspective, since you live in academia now, how were your students and how will you and your colleagues as professors explain how poorly the Democrats did?
To a large extent, this does come down to message. And the Republican candidates had a simpler, easier standard message. A vote for X is a vote for Obama. And they showed great message discipline through the entire process of sticking with that. We didn't have anyone talking about the benefits of rape or whatever else,
right,
whatever other crazy stuff that we have seen in the past out of some Republican candidates. So there was great message discipline there. It was a harder message for Democrats to carry because they had different messages. They tried to localize the election. So in each case, it was about what was going on in their states. I think some Democrats may have gone too far in trying to distance themselves from Obama. And there have been some recriminations since the election along that line. Alison Lundgren Grimes refused to say who she voted for, even though she was a delegate to the Democratic convention. That put questions to her authenticity and her willingness to sort of level. And I so there were problems that came along with that, I think, as well.
I suppose the emotion that gripped me the most as I kept thinking back through this whole process was the emotion of disgust that candidates who identify themselves as Democrats distance themselves from the leader of Democrats in the nation who sits in the White House. And I got to thinking, Greg, it's not just about Democrats. The same thing happened to George W. Bush when he was having a hard time and Republicans pulled away from him and campaigned without him. And in both instances, the parties lost.
Yeah.
And it makes me think that politicians who are going to get in campaigns need to remember that the electorate seems to be displeased with Democrats' light and Republicans' light. They want to know, who are you? Are you the real thing? And then I can make a decision. But don't tell me you're a Democrat and then you don't act like one, or that you're a Republican don't
right,
act like one.
Right. And that's exactly the message that Ted Cruz is carrying to the Republican Party as now we've turned the page toward 2016.
Oh, my goodness. That's the only thing I've ever done that was like Ted Cruz.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's Cruz's message now to the Republican Party. No more McCains, no more Romneys. We need someone, maybe me, who will sort of stand up for what Republicans stand for. It's hard to gin up excitement in the base when you're not talking about the things the base cares about. But the other interesting thing, I look at some of the exit polls. 60% of the people who answered exit polls said that health care was a significant issue for them. 60% of those people who cited health care as an important issue voted for the Democrat. So we have this sense that when people are talking about health care reform, they are opposed to it. But in fact, it's exactly the opposite. That number jumped out at me probably more than anything else from the exit polls. So if Democrats are refusing to talk about health care reform and 60% of people who vote Democrat think it's important, there's something that's not connected. We get to the discussion of authenticity, and I think that's where you're going. And I think it's true. There is an authenticity gap here.
Yeah. You have seen candidates both in times of success and in times of difficulty. You've seen them up close. What do you think President Obama's feeling like today?
Well, there's no question that losses like this smart. And I think it's not just the president, but the people around him. This is a painful bucket of cold water in the face. For at least a few minutes, we can't delude ourselves into thinking we are more popular than we actually are. It's a bracing experience at best. But I think what happens very quickly is that then organizations move to the question of what is the light that we want to put this into? And politicians are very good at sort of separating the sort of personal from the message, from the professional. You have to be a successful politician in American politics. So I think probably fairly quickly that gets – you sort of vent that and then that gets set aside. And then the question becomes, okay, how do we present this? And I think the president and the people around him are looking at this saying, we have to stand up for what we think is important and we have to offer – an olive branch. So it's a little bit of both. And I think when you listen to Mitch McConnell's speech last night, there was a little bit of both in that too. He said, just because there are two parties doesn't mean we always have to be fighting, but here are all the things we want. In some respects, I think this turn of the page makes it a little bit easier for the president to take on some of these key issues like immigration reform and so on and so forth, because he had to worry for the last year about what the impact would be on various Democratic Senate candidates. If he moved out on some of these issues. That's off his back now.
Right.
He's got a little bit more room to move. Now, of course, we are now in the 2016 presidential race, so there is some of that, but it's not as immediate and it's not as varied. So, so to some extent, this frees him up a little bit.
Yeah. President Bill Clinton has been seen as a powerful elder statesman within the party. But among the candidates that he and potential presidential candidate Hillary Clinton worked to elect, Tuesday's results were abysmal for them as well. How do you see what happened in this 2014 election affecting 2016 and Hillary Clinton?
First of all, you're right, and I think it has to particularly hurt when you look at Arkansas losing the Senate seat and the governorship is now moving to the Republicans. And so that's got to be particularly difficult for the Clintons. This is that point in time where they're sort of sitting down and figuring out, okay, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for a Clinton candidacy in 2016? Beyond that, it's difficult to say exactly what this means in their context, because this was, I almost hate to use this term because it's overused, but it really was, there was a wave here. And I think it's difficult to hold any of the surrogates who are out there directly responsible. In fact, I think Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton's work on behalf of candidates, successful or not, buys them goodwill, as everyone pretty much assumes she will move into the nomination process. Yeah.
What were the biggest mistakes the Democrats made?
I think that Tom Udall's race in Colorado is a good example. I think making some assumptions, trying to narrow what the race was about. Tom Udall tried to make that race in Colorado about women's reproductive issues, and it was a mistake. We're in a place in American politics right now, in American society right now, where people are worried about a lot of things, and trying to build the race around one particular issue was a mistake, and I suspect we saw that in some other places as well. Again, it's really difficult to localize some of these races in the face of so many national challenges. Mm-hmm. I don't know if many of them could have done much better. I do know, and I think this is interesting, because Jean Shaheen in New Hampshire, who's the only Democrat in a race that was tight, who managed to win, I think she took advantage of her longstanding relationship with the voters. And I think other candidates could have done this too. Her message boiled down in the last few weeks in that race to, you know me. Mm-hmm. Three-term governor, finishing her first term in the Senate, spent most of her adult life in the state, busy in the state in politics and policy. Mm-hmm. This came down to the message of, you know me, particularly powerful because she's running against a guy who just happened to move into the state last year. Yeah. Although I do think it's a powerful message, and I think that other candidates might have been smart to pick up some variation on that message.
What do Republicans need to do when they take control of the Senate as well as the House?
Something, anything. And this is going to be the challenge. The Republicans really have, I think, two mandates. The moderate Republicans and independents, and independents did break fairly quite clearly for Republicans in these races, and that's important. So you've got these independents and moderate Republicans out there who are looking for somebody to do something, to start tackling these problems and take them on. And that is probably Mitch McConnell's inclination, just as it is really John Boehner's inclination as an individual. Mm-hmm. But the other mandate is from the base that says, we got to take on the president. We've got to start having these votes on eliminating Obamacare. We've got to do the same thing on immigration. We have to do the same thing on regulation, various types of government regulation. We've got to start kicking some butt now. Mm-hmm. We hold both houses. And again, Ted Cruz is probably going to be the guy who's sort of leading that in the Senate. So the new majority leader has to figure out a way to somehow satisfy both of these groups, both of these mandates. And we've seen how much trouble John Boehner has had with that. Mm-hmm. He's been humiliated on more than one occasion by his own caucus in the House. And I suspect unless McConnell has some skills that we haven't yet seen, he's going to have a similar situation.
What's the one piece of advice that you have for Democrats going forward?
Democrats have an opportunity now to begin to coalesce. 2016 is going to be a very different race. It's not only going to be a very different race because it'd be a presidential year. But it looks like, and aside from talking about the strengths and weaknesses of the likely nominee, it looks like the Democratic Party will not be doing battle, in spite of these losses, over the soul of the Democratic Party. There will be a little of that, but it's not going to be what we usually see in these postmortems of elections. I think there is a general consensus here, and I think that the Democrats will. And partly that's because they have a very visible and sort of obvious nominee. There will be a sort of a gathering of the Klan that makes it a little bit easier for them to sort of deal with this post-trouncing period. So I think that's sort of where we will see the Democratic Party leadership heading.
You know, voters seem to have great confidence in the consequences of their votes, the consequences of an election, as it should be. I remember saying on the show when President Obama was first elected to office that I anticipated some real fall off of excitement about politics because there were going to be a lot of people disappointed
right.
in what
yes.
happened.
Yes.
I think that the Republicans are set up for a similar situation because there was so much passion and a lot of the passion, angry passion, about the gridlock in Washington. Isn't the gridlock going to continue?
Yes. There are those two mandates that don't fit together.
Yeah.
And so the Republicans have to figure out how to keep those two very different groups happy. You know, there's gridlock between Democrats and Republicans, but there's also we have seen gridlock within the Republican Party
yeah.
in the House side.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we have the potential of seeing, particularly if Ted Cruz decides to make this the jumping off point for a presidential bid.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be challenging his own majority leader. And I don't think Ted Cruz has any difficulty taking that on at all. I think
yeah.
he actually will enjoy it immensely.
Yeah. Greg LaBelle is Assistant Professor of Political Management at George Washington University and head of the Semester in Washington program. Greg, 2 weeks in a row, you've taken time out of a very busy schedule to lend your expertise to this important conversation. I really do appreciate it. I know our listeners do as well. Whatever the situation in the nation, it's good to talk with you about it. I always come away having learned something and have insights that I want to ponder. Thank you for making that possible, and we'll do it again soon.
Well, it really is important, and the fact that you are continuing to talk about this and is a real service. Thank you.